remind me a little bit about your background. I know you said you're a cattle producer, feeder, attorney. Give me a little bit of your background here so I can add that into the story.
Sure. I come from a little town called Desmet, and for anybody that wants to know where that is, think of the Laura Ingalls Wilder books. I'm literally living at the little house on the prairie in that community. So that gives you an orientation point. It's the middle of the eastern half of South Dakota, and we're in a crop cattle area. So a lot of our producers have mixed operations. Certainly my family does that. We have a finishing feedlot under Monteslope, and then we have a background operation with my son, and then a cow-calf operation that we run between 200 and 225 head.
So let's start on that note here, Todd. Let's talk about conditions back home. We know basically with a lot of the ranchers that are gathered here as well, the western half of the U.S., very dry. It has been dry where you're located, like you just shared. And so what does that mean when it comes to, you know, putting cattle out to grass, feeding cattle, getting forage for cattle, and the crops as well? Because we've been having some challenging conditions, like you shared earlier, virtually since April.
I guess to give you a direct example of how it's impacted our operation, I would normally have our feedlot full of calves, and typically I would be looking for yearlings right now. I have 2 weeks of silage left over from the cattle I finished last and emptied our lots with at the 1st of June, and I have no desire to load cattle in there without some additional crop. So it's having an impact. You know, a lot of the backgrounders aren't loading up right now because they're concerned about what their feedstuffs are going to be. And I'm one of those. I will be cutting silage here within the next week to 2 weeks. And, you know, the quantity that we're going to produce is certainly going to be down. It's going to be impacted. You know, and the other big factor for us is what's corn going to do? I mean, the wild card is that, you know, I don't want to pay $6 and $7 corn, because from a cattle feeding standpoint, it doesn't work very well. So there's a lot of unknowns, which typically are kind of out of the equation at this time of the year. Normally, I have a pretty good handle on what I think our corn production is going to be. I don't have that degree of certainty.
When we talk about uncertainties in the world, one of those is, you know, the talks about price transparency in the cattle markets, price discovery, if you will. You know, those conversations are continuing here at convention. I know NCBA has made some guidelines in regards to the path forward. And so bring us up to speed on that topic, the cattle markets.
Well, cattle price discovery is obviously critical to the future of the industry. I was one of the participants that went to Phoenix for the big meeting that was talked about between several organizations. And I can tell you from my perspective, it was great to get those organizations together and get multiple ideas from some very intelligent individuals. And so that, you know, if that's a sign of the future, that rather than working against each other, we can work together as an industry, because we already have enough detractors. We need to move forward. In terms of the policy, our live cattle marketing group has been working for over a year and a half now on a system to be able to help encourage greater cash trade. You know, to a lot of your listeners, and certainly in my home area, we have some cash trade because we're in an area where we typically trade live cattle. I have two or three packers that I deal with on a regular basis. But the biggest issue for me in that whole problem is shackle space. The fact when we have a Holcomb fire or the COVID situation when it hit last year, it was readily transparent that we are at the mercy of the the packers in their ability to process our animals. And when we back up a lot of fat cattle, it just kills our market. So one of the ways to address that most effectively is to increase some additional packing capacity and then put some leverage back in the producer. I mean, that cow-calf guy is going to get a way better price from that feedlot operator if that feedlot operator will know that he can make a profit for the first time in about 4 or 5 years. So we need to get back into a position where we can negotiate better.
Another item of discussion that will certainly garner some attention at convention this year is tax policy. With the previous administration, we worked forward to get some policy that worked for agriculture. And so what are the tax policy discussions looking like from a cattle perspective?
Well, from a grandfather and from a dad and from an attorney that does a lot of work in estate planning and transition, this issue probably scares me more than anything I've seen in a number of years. When I pass, or if I want to transition some land to my sons or daughters, when I'm faced with an artificial tax, and I'm just going to use an example, if I transferred 3/4 of land to my son by gift, currently I would pay nothing to do that. I would lose a stepped-up basis. Under the Biden proposal, my son would have to pay a capital gains tax, even though he's not selling the land, or I guess I would pay the tax. He would be the recipient. But then the tax level, and this is what your producers or your listeners really need to be aware of. The tax level is 43.8% on that artificial capital gains. You know, if I choose to sell a quarter of land, I know I'm going to pay tax. I understand those rules, and I'll gladly do it. But to impose a tax on simply a transfer of land is just going to devastate the rural farm economy. That we can't survive this.